Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 5 of Pack One Pick One podcast. We are your hosts, Alec Cheesewheel Haste.
What up, girl?
And Mason Lang.
What up, girl?
I am Josh Richter.
Fuck you.
How are you guys? How are you doing?
Good. Happy that I didn't have to go to work today. I got the day off. Well, I had to go to school, but it was fine. You know, excited to be here.
Alec, you kind of told me about your day already, but for the listeners at home, any words of wisdom?
I actually was a little confused when you asked, how are you doing? I was like, they can't talk to us.
I thought the exact same thing!
No. You guys.
Oh.
You know, that's great.
Put a little human face to this, otherwise, like, very...
Yeah, we're all so robotic, like, yeah. Really super formal. I don't really think that they can get a lot of our personality.
Put a face to it, put a fucking picture up.
I would speak sarcastic also. Obviously, we're all very, like, personable, I think. Is that conceited to say?
No. Oh. I think...
Weird.
I think because, like, we obviously read people's comments. They said we have, like, good energy and all that
stuff.
Oh,
yeah. As a matter of fact, we got a comment on the... what's it called? What's the
cube? You totally just ganked my segue.
I know! Isn't it great? We got a comment on the cube page thing.
Yeah, on MTGCast, actually.
That's what it's called. Shout out to them.
Yeah, to Matthias.
Listen to me pitch my product. Please buy our product.
Product placement, Taco Bell. For you Kung Pao fans. Alright, anyways.
I love Taco Bell.
I do love Taco Bell.
Me too. We should get Taco Bell to sponsor us. Oh, we could, like, man. Intro with a chalupa or something. Oh my gosh, how was your day, Alec?
I'd like a pack one, pick one gordita, please.
That sounds great. Yeah. I think I,
catch diarrhea on the wheel.
Here's an idea. We could have a Taco Bell draft in addition to a cube draft. We could all, like, order Taco Bell, put it all out on the table, and then draft the Taco Bell.
Oh no, fuck, just like draft all our different toppings, and whoever has the best taco at the end of it, like, wins the draft.
who's gonna be the taco judge, though, because they obviously can't be in the draft.
Yeah, no, at Taco Bell. This takes place at Taco Bell,
right? But who's gonna judge who has the best
the taco? Owner of the Taco Bell.
Well, no, the people eating our tacos.
Oh, okay, so we don't even get to eat our own masterpieces?
Well, you do eventually, doofus, but, like, okay. First...
You'd have to get enough toppings to make two. If you only had one taco, it would be pretty shitty.
Well, if everybody says yours is garbage, you're not going to want to eat it in shame.
I guess that's true.
That's delightful.
Okay, so anyways, we got a comment. We've had a few comments, so thank you to all that are listening. But specifically, we got our first major question.
Ooh, yeah.
So I'm just going to read. This comment is from Matthias. He said, hey, just listened to your first episode. I really enjoyed it. I'm not currently a cube player. In fact, all of my cube experiences have been quite awful. We're sorry about that.
Because he hasn't played
that's
our
really
cube.
Sad. That makes, yeah. That makes me sad to hear.
It makes me really
Let's
sad
get
to
him
hear.
From Sweden, because he's from Sweden. Yeah. Let's get him here. Play our cube. It'll
yeah.
be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, we would love to have you. But even going on, even so, it is really interesting to me, and I really enjoyed you guys going in depth on card and archetypes and motivating your process. I especially love your draft one, get a playset rule of some certain cards, like Squadron Hawk, etc. So I got a question for you. What about Hedron Alignment? Could it work? Why or why not? How would a build around card of this caliber impact the cube in general and the other blue-colored cards, etc.? Feel free to discuss on the podcast. Imagine there'd be several issues with it, the Timmy mentality of the card being only a minor one. Either way, would really like this to spring discussion and insight into your process. Looking forward to more episodes. Thanks, and cheers from Sweden, Matthias.
Well, that's cool that someone listened to us from Sweden. That's neat.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Dude, because all the best heavy metal comes from Sweden.
Seriously. Like, really? Yarda.
Melodic death metal originated from there. Monomarth is from there, and they're fucking Vikings.
We're gonna have more... This is more commercial than podcast right now. We're just doing nothing but...
Dude, I could do a whole podcast gushing about awesome metal bands.
Well, thank God we're not Pick One Pack metal something. I don't...
Okay, for the record, Mason's listening to shitty pop music and doesn't understand the beauty that is heavy metal yet.
You don't understand that Call Me Maybe went diamond in the US, okay? Diamond. That's like the upper echelon of songs that have ever been recorded.
That just means a lot of people are wrong.
Yeah, like everybody
you guys are
agreeing
wrong for not
on
appreciating
the wrong.
Call Me Maybe. That song is an anthem.
Tell you what.
I mean, generation.
tell you what, if, because that song went fucking diamond or whatever the hell you just went on about, if you can convince me or otherwise prove to me that Wizards added the colorless mana symbol based on the success of Carly Rae Jepsen's Call Me Maybe, I will acquiesce and I will buy every one of her records on vinyl.
look for it in the next blog post. I will make some very compelling arguments.
So anyways,
after Matthias, which I will kill myself.
So, Matthias, we're going to answer your question.
So, guys, Hedron Alignment.
How do you feel about Hedron Alignment?
Well, it is an enchantment.
It's an enchantment from the Battle for Zendikar block. It says, 2 in a blue, hexproof. You can pay 1 in a blue, scry 1, and then at the beginning of your upkeep, you may reveal your hand. You win the game if you have a copy of Hedron Alignment in play, in your hand, in the graveyard, and in exile.
Man, that's a tall order. So, we would have to cut a card from the blue section of the queue, which is already really tough to do.
Yes.
That's like the tightest color. All the cards feel great.
Yeah. And everything that is in blue in most Vintage and Legacy cubes are like, they're the most powerful effect at whatever cost they are. Like, the most powerful version of that effect, right? Like,
yeah.
Like Control Magic or Treachery, we were just having a discussion right before we started recording. You know,
is Hedron Alignment the best alternate win condition at 3 mana?
Ooh,
that's a good question, right? Like,
that's
I'm not sure.
That's a great question.
Probably better than Battle of Wits in the cube.
Arguably better than Battle of the Wits, because you can't.
I would love to see the Battle of Wits cube deck.
I'd love to see the Battle of Wits cube. There's the draft process
would take like an hour and a half, right? Because
yeah.
I'd have to draft, like, 300 card monstrosities.
Yeah.
Hey. Sounds rough.
Okay, I already hate this idea.
Yeah, needless to say, Battle of Wits
so
not going
to. So, how are you
going to
exile this Hedron? So, one, without there being, like, mass tutor effects to search up every copy from your deck, you're going to have to, like, physically get them all into your hand, right? I mean, I guess that's actually not so bad, because being blue, you're the color of, like, kind of cantripping, milling through your deck real fast, and trying to find those copies in the first place. And the fact that once you get a hold of one, you can start scrying, like, aggressively scrying, right? The fact that you have Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time probably give you the option of not only finding a way to exile one of them, but also hopefully find your way toward the rest of them.
Right. Yeah, I think that this would probably be a card that would fit into
blue-red, right? Because you need to have looting effects to get them into your graveyard and also then exile.
Sure, yeah. I was going to say blue-red works, or like even blue-green if you're like aggressively like milling and stuff.
Sure,
with like things like cards like even like Satyr Wayfinder or what have you. Or like a Sultai list, maybe? Because you get tutors,
sure.
You get cantrips, you get cards that mill you, you get discard outlets, and then you get delve spells. So something even like Tasker
puts
a lot of work in for you.
Tasker would be sick.
But like, because you also want the green for, like, your Eternal Witnesses, your Regrowths, things like that.
Right,
because
if you ever accidentally put 3 in the graveyard, you just instantly lose, and you slay over it. So maybe you just have to be Sultai to be able to do this consistently, right? Because otherwise you run the risk of blowing yourself out really bad, right?
Yeah.
If you're either straight blue-green, and you, like, don't have enough ways to exile it, or you don't have enough ways to regrowth it, like, if you're straight blue-black, then you have no way to regrowth it. Kind of sketchy.
Or if you have Dream Halls, you could do it, because you get to exile a copy to Dream Halls to cast the other Hedron Alignment.
That's kind of neat.
And then if you have a way to like pitch them to the graveyard or something to get one in the yard, and then you keep
it. Sounds
them
very
hand.
Slow though. Like this
it,
is
yes,
this is
I
grind.
Think there's a lot of work to make this card happen.
I will say though, I bet there are certain matchups where you could find yourself with just an enchantment that lets you scry for 2 mana would be really dope. It'd be like Sensei's Top.
Yeah.
Well, I think the main argument against having this, at least in this cube, when he asked about our process, we've talked at great length about compacting archetypes, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Having these tight packages and that sort of thing. I don't think enough of the cards that would enable this strategy stand on their own well enough that we wouldn't have to jump through way too many hoops to enable something like this.
Well, all the cards we talked about so far were just the cards that are already in the cube, right? Except for Dream Halls.
Dream Halls would be the only one.
But yeah. Like,
every other card we talked about, we were just talking about cards that were already in the cube.
But that's
if
also
you found yourself with a Hedron Alignment, right?
Like, yeah. But that's also very narrow, right? Like we talked about, you can probably only play this with at least 2, if not all 3, of the specific colors to make that one thing work. And even then, you're going to pick this card up like 11th because nobody's going to draft that card unless they have.
That's true. How embarrassed would you be if you picked it in your World Net deck?
I don't know. Depends what else I drafted in my WorldNet deck. And
that'd be sweet, though.
The size of your WorldNet deck. WorldNet's a, like, that's a whole discussion that we're going to have later, I think.
True,
WorldNet. Right? Because we're going to talk about the main point of this episode is the colorless and artifacts section. Conspiracies we'll touch on. But,
yeah.
Like, WorldNet, there's so many factors because, like, how many non-basics did you draft? That makes your deck smaller. And
all right, I've officially sold myself that Hedron Alignment doesn't sound like the worst thing in the world. I bet that for a low, not a low-powered cube, but a lower-powered cube, like something in the middle, not actual power, probably you want to cut back from some of the fast mana, maybe some of the more broken cards, which, I mean, we've cut some of the more broken cards away anyway.
But, like, less combo-oriented, less,
It feels more like a inevitable win condition for a very mid-rangey deck.
Like, this is like a... I mean, our friend Tim Yang would never never play this card.
Right.
But this is the card that, like, Tim Yang would go, oh, I found a win condition at, you know, 10th pick pack 3, finally, in his otherwise, like...
Mono blue
or, like, blue-black, all spells, no threats deck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now he's found a way to just win the game after doing all this grinding.
Demigod Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Yeah,
that happened.
It did. It totally did.
And it was good.
It was really good.
So, I don't think Hedron Alignment sounds like the worst thing in the world. I could definitely see myself drafting that and having a lot of fun with it. Like, I'd play it.
Yeah.
Probably. For sure.
I think the environment has to be right. I think that if we were just slot this in...
It's a, like, tricky card, right? It's probably one of those cards that... And I am a fan of a lot of these types of cards where you can have it in the cube and it'll go last pick 14 times out of 15, but every once in a while someone might, like, get a bug up their ass, pick it, and then, like, go for it. And it could be kind of sweet. Like, they could rattle off some wins and they'd feel really clever and smart about it.
Well, I mean, I think it's one of those where if you got it late and you hadn't built around it, there'd be no penalty for cutting it. Because unlike with the Squadron Hawks and the Demigods, there's no rule saying you have to play all four of them. Depending on your deck makeup, playing three might be right. Like, I think we kind of talked about two is kind of the baseline, but for the most part, you could play three. This one, you have to play all four. Guaranteed.
Yeah,
four slots of your deck are this card.
Yeah, and it's almost like a legendary card. You don't ever want to play two copies.
Yeah, you can't.
Unless you have a way to get, like, say, I guess if you have something like Oblivion Ring.
No, it's got Hexproof, yo. You can't even do
you
well.
Can
you can do
your
own. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. If you have Oblivion Rings and stuff.
That's a bold strategy.
Right. Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, or you Council's Judgment for your own Hedron Alignment. Like, you're like, I vote Hedron Alignment. They're
I figured out ways to get them into my hand, graveyard, and into play. Just need to figure out how I'm going to get it into
exile. I guess
if
you play, like, a sweet, like, blue-white control deck, straight blue-white, and you have, like, your Disenchants and your Oblivion Rings and your Baral's Expertise. Like, can you imagine Baral's Expertise bounce one Hedron Alignment off and
can't.
Put it in then
only
cast...
artifacts and creatures.
You're right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Never mind.
But I do get what you mean because
bounce all their guys to not die.
Just get
slam
them in
the
your
Hedron
graveyard
archives.
And then
there
Sun Titan one back into play. Oh my god, the possibilities are unlimited.
Okay.
I'm in. Sounds dope.
I'm not sold that it would do well in the environment that, like, I and we have crafted here, but I could totally see this if somehow Wizards wrote the client for MTGO to be able to, like, draft multiples.
Oh, yeah.
This would be a card, I think, that they would totally just slot right in the MTGO cube.
Yeah.
And people would draft it, and there would be a non-zero people... A number of people that would win with it, right?
The thing, like, about it is, like...
Or it would be bad because MTGO cubes tend to...
I would at least think about... Like, if it was in the cube, I think I'd probably pick it. At the same time, I don't know if I would want to get it into the cube because there are so many things I want to play. There's so many different archetypes and cards individually that I want to draft. And, you know, new stuff that we've added that I think is really cool. Old stuff that I haven't played in a while. Like, this sounds sweet enough that I would probably want to try to draft it if it was in front of me.
Yeah.
If someone was like, Mason, do you want this Hedron Alignment, you know, before the draft starts? I'd be like, sure, all right, I'll take it, see if that works out. But, you know, I don't know if I'd want to, like...
I think the biggest, like, hindrance of this card or a card like it is that it's not inherently powerful on its own. Like, and it doesn't play well with other cards. You have to make other cards play well with it, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So...
Definitely.
Whereas, like, even, you know, cards like, I don't know,
it's the build around you want to catch late.
Yeah, which is weird, right? Yeah, it's not the it's things like recurring nightmare or birthing pod, things like, you know, that you want to pick a opposition. You pick it. You want to pick it as early as possible because now it informs the rest of your draft decisions.
This card is like, you kind of want to have a sweet deck already, probably a really specific sweet deck, and then you just kind of like, oh, I'll ship it, let it wheel, and if it doesn't wheel, my deck's still going to be fine, and if it does, like, maybe I'll play it. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, if it does, I want to see that.
My deck's too good, I'm not going to play it anyway because then I have to cut four dope spells to play
all these. That's the other problem. Like, things like Demigod or Squadron Hawk tend to help fuel the rest of your strategy very well.
Oh, yeah. How do you win a game?
You feel good having all four or three of them. This, you're not ever going to feel good about putting three copies of a card you only want to cast one of the whole game.
Yeah. How do you ever win a game where you open up your opening seven, you're like, wow, two Hedron Alignments. Turbo. That's the deck I'm playing, Turbo Hedron Alignments.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, just don't play a land. Draw a discard.
So, another. I actually got another message. So, you know.
Yeah.
I actually got another message the other day. Someone else asking a question. What are some of our favorite cube formats for less than eight people? I know a lot of people out there have cubes and don't always have 8 or 10 people, like, you know, we pretty generally do around here, to cube draft with. So, what are your favorite, like, sub 8-person formats to do? My personal is Rochester. I really like Rochestering with like 4 to 6 people.
Give a quick overview of Rochester for people that
Instead of everyone kind of drafting face down very secretively, you deal out a 15 card pack and then face up in a wheel, everyone picks face up from the same pack.
Okay.
You go back and forth, boom, boom, boom. You know, wheel the picks. So
yeah.
One person's getting the first pick and then the last pick and then so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And you keep going around in a circle like that, three packs for each person. So the drafting process takes a while, but it's very cool to be able to see everyone else's draft strategies, you know, breaking up and playing out in the middle. And the more people you get into it, the more complicated it gets, because at four people, you can kind of each pick a deck and then not really step on each other's toes. With six people, that's basically impossible. You know, someone has to be fighting over something. So between like 4 to 6 people, I think Rochester is a really cool draft format.
It's fantasy football for magic cards.
Yeah.
Sounds sweet.
Do you have any sub-8 person formats?
I was
going to
say, Alec, you
want
to get one? I'm going to pull up the rules for one of my favorite. I just want to make sure I get it right when I explain it to people.
I believe what we did was Rotisserie, right? That's when you lay out the entire cube in its entirety, establish the fantasy football pick order, and you just go to town.
Yes, that is actually my favorite draft, or that's actually my favorite format in all of Magic, is Rotisserie Draft.
Yeah.
I'm used to doing it with either 8 or 10 people.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't even remember how many we did it with last time. I don't play a ton of alternate formats, because I tend to hate anything outside of convention, because I just don't feel like dealing with new
things.
Don't you
love Two at a Giant?
I don't love it.
Hear that, Tim?
Well, I also don't have, like,
you've teamed up with
friends,
Tim
Yankovic,
doing Two at a Giant, right?
No.
No?
No. I don't think I've ever played 2HG with Tim.
Oh, really? I thought it... Do you team up with Josh, then?
No.
We've done it once.
We did it once.
Together. Who do you usually team up with, then?
I don't usually team... I don't have friends. I've done this, like, a handful of times.
Yeah, quite... I mean, since I've known him, you've done this maybe 5 times total.
Really? I don't even think it's that
I
many.
Just, I
probably
thought
not,
you
but...
the person always Two at a Giant. Oh,
I
really?
Two at a Giant.
And you don't even
I don't do it anymore,
Alec.
But
Burn.
I did it a lot with Tim, and I've done it with my friends, Andy.
So
and...
I was replacing you with Josh in my mind.
Yeah.
Weird.
A lot of people do that. It's okay.
Yeah.
I got you. It's because you both look the same and you both work at Target.
It is not because we look the same.
You guys look pretty similar.
His beard's more epic than mine.
His hair is more metal
than mine.
Yeah, I look like a Viking.
I look like a hardcore kid.
and Alex, we differ philosophically very heavily on the two.
Yeah, we do.
Alex more of like a... Would you say you're like a... emo kid that kind of let himself go after high school, just kind of like...
Dude, he's going to walk up and leave this podcast. Take that back. He's the farthest from emo I've ever met.
I mean, I guess if your definition of emo is Jesus Christ...
Yay,
Well, all right. The Western interpretation
so,
of Jesus Christ.
You like Rochester. Alec, you like Rotisserie. Mason, you're also a huge fan of Rotisserie, so... We should... definitely, I want to spend an episode sometime
talking about rotisserie draft. Oh my god.
Sure, rotisserie draft, but I was going to spend an episode talking just about all of these that we're doing right now, and we're only barely touching on rather than...
Oh, sure.
But I do want to answer the question. So, one of my favorites is 10-chester drafting, which is a four-player format, or is designed to be. You make 36 10-card packs, and you lay out the first pack, first player picks a card, then each player follows in turn. After all the players have selected one card, you discard the remaining six cards.
That's sweet.
They're just exiled from the draft now.
Huh.
So it makes all of your decisions super important, right?
Wow.
And knowing what's getting exiled from the rest of the draft, like, you're just never going to see these cards again, so you really have to craft your strategy. And it puts a lot of tension on whether or not you want to hate draft, how well you draft your fixing.
God, that sounds so stressful.
It is a very intense draft. I'm going to be so angry by the end of that. But that's what I like about it. It rewards very, very tight drafting rather than, like, you know, say, tight deck building at the end of a regular draft or something. You know, like, maybe you slipped up a few times in the draft, but you can save it after the fact. This, all of the good decisions have to come during the draft, or otherwise you may just not even have 23 playables by the end of it. You know?
Yeah. That's a problem I run into all the time when I see other people and also myself do Winston drafts.
Mm-hmm.
Winston drafting is a heads-up draft format where you deal out 90 cards face down, right, and you put them all in a big stack. Then you deal out, like, you know, three little one-card piles. And then in turn, you look at the first pile and you can either take it and add it to your pool, or you can put it back, put another random card on top of that pile, move on to the next one. You can either, you know, take that second pile or move on, yada yada. If you make it all the way to the last one, you don't want any of the piles. You just take a random card off the top. So then the piles start to get bigger and bigger. You know, the other guy goes, he looks at the now two-card pile, decides whether he wants it or not, can put it back, add a third card, so on and so forth. Eventually, you see people start picking up the piles. It's a heads-up draft format, which is fun. You know, you can obviously, like, gives you something to do if it's just, like, you and your buddy hanging out on day two of a GP or something. But it's super fucking difficult because you very often wind up with decks that barely have enough playables.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, yeah, are really stretching. I mean, I think personally the draft strategy in that format is to just draft, like, as many colors as you possibly can with any kind of consistency so that you can have enough cards that are...
Most of the times I've Winchestered, my decks are three colors at the bare minimum.
Yeah, I've made the mistake of trying to draft two colors before, and you'll be like, I'm two colors, except for all the colors that I'm splashing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what happens when you only have 90 cards. Like, Jesus, you know?
No kidding.
So, segueing from that question into... Great questions, by the way.
Yeah, those are awesome.
Please send us more. Yeah, we like to discuss questions. This kind of stuff.
Sure. They like to discuss this kind of stuff.
Segueing in from that into... deck building in general, we're going to feature our 2-3-0 decks from our last cube draft with my cube.
Yes, we had an awesome cube draft at IHOP last weekend.
So, congratulations to Jim Houseworth and Mason Lang here.
Oh, the crowd goes wild!
Mason MCG Lang! Champion Mason Lang!
It's more fun when you guys do it, but it's fine. I'll do it for myself.
If it had you not, I might have. But once you did, you ruined it.
Mason and Jim, and then Alec here getting a 2-1, and me scraping together a 1-2. But, you know, you guys carrying the team with your sweet 3-0s.
Yeah, me and Jim were kicking ass. I wish, if I had not have had to work the next morning, I would have challenged him to a, you know, throwdown battle.
Yeah.
To determine who the real 4-0 was and who the, you know, imitator was. But he probably would have crushed me anyway.
Mason, you want to talk about your deck first, and then
My deck was great. It was a blue-green Eternal Command Delirium-style deck. There were some, like, mild graveyard synergies going across it, but mostly it was, like, a blue-green mid-range deck with a bunch of regrowth effects, some value spells, and a top end consisting of, like, Ishkana, Thragtusk, Emrakul... Emrakul, the Promised End, small Emrakul.
Yeah.
And, you know, real quality curve of cards all the way up.
Memrakul.
Memrakul.
Umrakul.
But the actual draft, I remember being super interesting. For the first time, I opened up my first pack, and didn't try, like, there was nothing that I specifically wanted to draft at the beginning of it. Super often I find myself either with a bug up my ass trying to draft one very specific archetype or a very specific card because I want to show everyone how good it is. You know, people give me shit a lot of the time for wanting these weird cards in the cube. And then I'll be so up on trying to get everyone else to realize how good a card is that I'll just build an entire deck just so that I can play that card, just so that I can 3-0 with it and be like, see, isn't it powerful? Look at how bad I'm killing you with this card. But
and then he fails. And these cards never get played again.
I would argue more often than not, though, that you have done very well with archetypes that you've...
I crushed everyone with Braids and Smokestacks for, like, a year solid.
Yeah.
Before other people had drafted that archetype. Like, I drafted Stacks in every color combination for, like, a year and a half.
Other than me.
Other than you. But, like, people just weren't doing it.
Yeah, no, our play group does not get Smokestacks. They just don't.
I think they used
Chris Malza certainly
yeah,
does.
Yeah, he does.
He loves that card.
I think it's something
I drafted Smokestacks this week. Yeah.
You did.
I think it's something
never
people
once cast it.
Used to not
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
This was like years ago.
Yeah,
this
we're
was back when
like
the complexion of the cube was totally different back then, mind
yeah.
you. And it was like a way that people just didn't play Magic at all in this cube. Like me
yeah.
trying to small ball people and like deny them on resources and attack their, you know, hands and permanents
or like
other
playing,
than just their creatures.
Like playing land, Mox Diamond, Tangle Wire.
Yeah,
know, like
into like, you know, balance or whatever on
yeah.
turn three or four. Like people just weren't Ugh. Doing that kind of thing, and I was doing it across like every color combination that I could possibly find with every different random card or synergy that I could come up with for a very long time just because I was trying to prove to people how good it was. And you know, that was like a very similar pattern to me. I remember trying to get Josh to put in various cards for a long time, and when he finally would, then I would just draft them over and over and over again and
yeah.
smash people with this very specific thing, and then no one else would wind up doing it after me. It was like it never caught on, I guess. Even now, like I've had a couple sweet 3-0s with Champion of the Parish and Student of Warfare and Ranger of Eos and a couple of like those white mid-range aggro cards that I really like, and yet it seems like it's one of those things where I feel like if I'm not drafting it, no one is. But with how many things are available in the cube to do, I mean, you can't expect things to get drafted every single week. That's why it's fun.
So. Yeah.
We've taught them very well.
This deck I thought was really cool because I didn't come into it with any of those preconceived notions. I wasn't trying to build a Jeskai Ascendancy deck. I wasn't trying to build a Storm deck. I was just building whatever. Just decided, fuck it. Like, whatever I see and kind of want to build. So I think I picked one, pack one, like a Cryptic Command, and then picked a couple of cantrips, saw an Ishkana, wanted to pick it, but instead wound up picking like some powerful blue card, shipped, and then immediately in the next pack saw Emrakul. And I was like, damn it, I wish I had picked Ishkana, then I could pick Emrakul and have like some kind of crazy Sultai Delirium deck. It would be so cool. But since I didn't pick Ishkana, I guess I'll just ship Emrakul and maybe someone else will wind up doing that.
But you did pick Ishkana.
No, because I wheeled it. So I shipped it all. Came all the way back on the round on the wheel, and I was like, oh my god, Ishkana, it's all happening. I think that might have been my first green card of the draft. No, I take that back. I picked a Kitchen Finks at some point in pack one, too. Kitchen Finks, super powerful. Then I picked up Ishkana. Immediately in the next pack had Emrakul, and I was just on cloud nine after pack one, just super excited about drafting like some weird Sultai deck, and I wound up being basically just blue-green.
Splashing. Ishkana's ability and one Dragonlord Silumgar.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was a super sweet deck. There was kind of some under the first layer hidden kind of graveyard synergies that were going on. Some
can we
eternal
change it
command.
Instead of Cloud 9, can we say on Cloud Post?
Yes, I'm all
that
for
sounds
it.
Sounds great.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I just thought...
all for
it,
100%.
Me.
Anyway, I don't want to stroke my ego about my own deck too much, but I did handily crush all the people that I played against. And... it was great. I'm not going to name any specific names because I don't want to shame them, but they got crushed. And
your modesty is overwhelming all of a sudden.
It is. Let it never be said that I'm not the most modest person in our group.
But don't worry. I'm sure you won't allow for that.
I really like the drafting the Corrupted Command / Mystic Confluence with Eternal Witness plan. the soft grind lock, you know.
Oh yeah, the eternal command strategy.
Yeah.
I thought it that's
really cool. I don't even think that I've seen anybody. I'm sure that people have drafted those cards together before, especially you, Alec. You draft blue green a lot, but I haven't seen anybody actually like play
the. Yeah, Eternal I got Command. To kind of assemble that combo at one point. I think it might have only been like one or two games,
mm-hmm.
And they were probably like very short games because my opponent conceded promptly after I got this online, but. It feels really good when it's happening, especially... Yeah, it feels good when it's with Cryptic Command, because you're like, you know, counter your spell, bounce my Eternal Witness, play Eternal Witness, get back Cryptic. Feels even better when you're doing it with Mana with Mystic Confluence, because then you can either catch up on the board where you're bouncing one of their creatures as well.
Yeah.
Or...
It becomes like a capsize,
you know, engine, drawing almost. Extra cards. I mean, oh, so grossly powerful. The other interesting part about my draft that I'll just touch on really briefly is that my mana fixing was really bad going into pack, like, two or three. It wound up being fine... But around the middle of pack two, I realized, like, I was trying to draft a pretty color-intensive blue-green deck and didn't have any fixing for, like, the Mirror Pool or Ishkana or Dragonlord Silumgar and stuff that I wanted to pick.
Well, I think it's very funny, like, or ironic that, you know, our last two episodes, we talked so heavily about draft fetch lands and, like, how mm-hmm. important mana fixing is and all this stuff. And you actually have zero fetch lands in here. You have Terramorphic Expanse Evolving Wilds, but there's no actual
fetch lands. So they were really slim in the draft. I don't know how you guys felt, but I thought the mana was like pretty tight. And it turned out a few seats over, one of the other guys had drafted WorldNet pick one, and then started slamming every non-basic he could find. So he had a pile of like 16 or 17 non-basic lands in his WorldNet deck to keep it really, really thin, which is a pretty cool strategy for WorldNet. Yeah. But... it meant he was cutting off lands for the rest of the group. So, around pack three, I decided that my mana base was going to heavily feature Terramorphic Expanse and Evolving Wilds, and that was going to be, like, a key piece of the way that I was going to fix my mana, which I wound up picking up both of them, Cultivate, Mox Diamond, like, a few different ways
to... Well, and you got Crucible to be able to replay those, you know.
So I wound up pretty basic land heavy, just splashing. I did splash a Waste, which might have not have been necessary, but I didn't ever want to not be able to set up Mirror Pool.
Yeah.
Mirror Pool, I thought, was a very powerful thing to do, especially when you have Crucible. You can kind of make tokens that are copies of whatever you want, and then replay your
Mirror Pool. Grindy.
It was super grindy. There was... a point where I was playing against my WorldNet opponent and we got into a position where I had three cards left in my library, he had three cards left in his library or something like that, and then I wound up drawing myself to death before it. Or no, he wound up just, like, overrun Garrett, killing me.
Yeah.
But it was going to come down to, like, the wire who was going to draw themselves to death first, which was cool. But, yeah, this deck was super cool. A lot of fun. We'll post a list and stuff if you want to check it out.
Yeah,
it was
all the lists will be in the show notes for both of these, so...
And then Jim Houseworth drafted a green-black reanimator deck.
Yeah, he drafted, like, the Alec Hayes special. You're the one that usually grabs this.
Yeah, if I recall,
I was like, trying to.
You were pained over not picking Primeval Titan pack one in our draft, right, this last week?
No. The only real painful choice I had to make, I played the green-black stacks deck. And I had to pass the 5-mana shitter that puts +1/+1 counters on all your guys and sacrifice stuff.
Because
he was in the same pack as the Carrion Feeder, and at the time I really needed a feeder. It didn't wheel, God knows why. And then...
I picked it immediately after you.
Yeah. And then... like, my deck was good. Some of my draws didn't line up very well.
Yeah.
Especially against decks that I thought, like, this is the stacks deck that does really well against it.
Yeah.
You know, never cast Braids, never cast Smokestacks. Oh. Two of, like, the real parts of the deck that make it really dumb, never got them online. So, but, you know, still good enough. You know, the creatures themselves are aggressive. I had some nice little value plays with the Zulaports and the Blood Artists. Plus the sacrifice outlets. Bitter Blossom was a house for me in the one game where I played on turn two. Bailed me out.
That card's always a house. That card is sweet.
Yeah. And I got to play... I also had Hymn of the Wild, so I got to play a turn four Wurmcoil Engine. And I eked out the win because Demon of Dark Schemes returns reanimated creatures tapped.
Yeah.
You know, that was dope.
Well, anyways, so...
So Jim's deck was really cool.
Yeah. I like... Alec, you and I have talked about this a lot. Not necessarily on the podcast, but certainly almost every cube draft, right? Like, we really enjoy playing the black-green reanimator deck because it allows you to cast your guys.
Yep.
If you can't get the main strategy Ramped online, them. Right?
It makes right. it so that your reanimator plan doesn't have to be the plan A. Yeah. It can be even a value-oriented play in your otherwise rampy...
Yeah. Well, and Jim's not ramping too heavy in this version. I mean, he's got Arbor Elf, you know, Elvish Mystic Birds of Paradise, and then
Grand Dynamo and Gilded Lotus, though, get you up there.
They do. They certainly do. And Grim Monolith. Like, they're, you know, he's still casting guys ahead of curve, like these
big, it is kind big of,
threats.
It,
but he was all in on, like, the real reanimator plan, right? He's got Lotless Troll,
well,
Cryptbreaker.
Well, I was going to say, it's pretty interesting because the mana rocks that he has, they aren't signets. They aren't, like, things that will add one mana to your pool. They will almost get you to casting your 6 and 7 drops all by themselves. I mean, right. those things go big. They yeah. generate a lot of mana.
Yeah, it's not yeah. the incremental ramp deck where you
no, know
your
it's the jump turn
ahead of curve.
Right.
This is the high impact version.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which is cool. Yeah, I think that's pretty telling.
Impact. Yeah.
But his deck.
Adds an element of fragility to it. And it does telegraph some of these plays, because, like, you're not
right.
playing the Gilded Lotus if you have other things to do.
Right.
You're doing it because you're going to play that big, dumb fatty.
Right.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
No.
I love this deck. I love the way it came together. And it does require maybe a little more luck than typical, but there's nothing wrong with that. And,
no.
You know, when it hits real hard.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got, you know, Cryptbreaker, Lotless Troll, Una's Prowler, Liliana the Veil.
Yeah, my favorite part about his deck...
And Survival for pitching.
My favorite part about his deck is actually the discard outlets. The reanimation targets are good. He doesn't have some of my favorites personally, but I do think he has the best.
Okay, he doesn't have
enablers.
Bristlebrand. What are your favorites?
Well, no, I just specifically don't like Sundering Titan very much, and I don't particularly like the Elesh Norn that you can't cast, but... That's not to say I wouldn't like Elesh Norn somewhere, just maybe on the sideboard.
But Mason, he can cast off Gilded Lotus.
Gilded Lotus! Oh, I knew you were going to say that too, you son of a bitch. I do think he has the best enablers, and that is Cryptbreaker and Survival and Liliana.
Right.
And Lotless Troll.
Yeah, I asked
Don't
him.
Get me wrong.
I remember,
Una's Prowler I hate, but Lotless Troll beats down, gives you a backup plan like that card. These cards are all dope and will kind of do things on their own.
Right.
Whilst also enabling your reanimation.
Yeah, and I remember sitting next to him through the whole draft, like we were sitting next to each other, and or even after the draft, like during matches, and I remember leaning over to him. I was like, "How do you feel about Lotless Troll?" Because like it's been a card that we've discussed multiple times, like on the fence, right?
Yeah, I've actually advocated cutting it before. For abrupt
decay. Yeah, and I've thought about it several times, and he's like, dude, this card is insane. Like, it does everything you want to be doing for this deck. Like, please don't cut it, you know? And he's like, especially the fact that he's like this line of text, and he just covers up the whole card and shows me the reanimate or the regenerate clause. He's like, this is so key to making this guy like just the nutter butters in this strategy. You know?
There have been plenty of times where I got the Lotless Troll.
Yeah.
And he himself created a sense of urgency because he beats down so hard. You threaten the reanimation.
Yeah.
It's always on the table. But if you don't deal with him or can't find a way to deal with him, you will just die to him.
Yeah. So, but this deck came together really well. He's got Disruption, like, you know, Inquisition, Duress, Hymn to Turok, all in the main. Liliana Vale obviously does multiple things for you. He's even got Demonic Tutor. And then his reanimate spells are all like the most powerful ones, right? Like reanimate, dance of the dead, victimize, like all great. So.
Yeah. I was also fighting with him early.
Yeah.
Because I saw the early in Tomb.
Yeah.
And so I love this deck. So I really want to play it. Didn't have the Crank Daddy yet. So I was like, all right, we'll take it. See what happens. I think I also picked up the Animate Dead as well. And then I just started seeing all the sweet stacks cards.
Yeah.
And I hadn't drafted that deck before, so I wanted to do it. You know, it is a bit of a test, and I did play it a bit sloppy, so I definitely want to do it again at some point, because there are definitely a few lines that I should have taken that I didn't.
Sure.
But early, I was fighting him for it, and he still made it work. And I didn't know it was him that I was going against. When I saw that the reanimate didn't wheel, I knew someone was in it.
Yeah. And then we all wound up on the same team. What a delight. Along with Our friend Jessica Adams, who is our first, our very first cube draft ever. We've known her for years, and this was her first time cube drafting with her. I had no idea. For some reason, I just always thought she had played in a few.
Yeah. No. Well, and I mean, especially like the fact that her husband Ryan like owns the common uncommon cube in the group, and like, you know, that he cubes all the time with that thing. So you would have assumed of all of our friends, like she would have definitely gotten in on a few, but no, this is her first one. Her deck is sick.
It just reminds me that, like, you know, friends we've had for a long time or brand new people who we may have just only met, and everyone just kind of comes together for cube drafting, which is really nice. It's a nice community builder.
Yep.
I really enjoy that about it.
I agree.
I hate it.
You're the worst.
So, Jim, sweet deck. Congrats on the 3-0. Mason, sweet deck. Also, congrats on the 3-0.
Thank Let the record show Mason was eating his hat because not a week earlier he was saying that Jim Hausworth makes shit decks and gets really lucky.
I stand by what I said. Jim Hausworth is a shitlord sometimes.
He's the worst.
A shitlord.
All right. He has been 3-0-ing a lot, though, seriously. If we had to fantasy... If we ever streamed a cube draft and that people, like picked who they thought were going to win, Jim would be a real pick for that. I mean, he has been crushing it lately. So we'll probably have to feature more of his decks. Oh, God. Okay, next thing I want to talk about. Well, you want to talk about this.
Yeah. I want to cover the Colorless and Artifacts section, and primarily we're going to start with talking about Signets. We've talked before, obviously outside of here, about the Signets, and we did a test run a couple years back where I cut all 10 of them, right? And pretty much like took a lot of flack from people for it. 'Cause
they're sweet?
Yeah. And... Because our playgroup loves the Signets, like, absolutely loves them. Our playgroup loves to draft multicolor decks. Like, we all like these, like, weird, like, 3, 4, 5 color decks all the time and, like, super rampy. We all like playing big, splashy cards, you know, very powerful effects. And the Signets enable a lot of that. But the question that's come to mind lately is whether or not the Signets are even healthy for the cube. And whether or not they're necessary, because it could be one or the other or both, you know?
Right.
And I think that I've seen Signets fall out of favor, certainly as a 10 set. Like, let's talk about having all 10.
Right. Because there are a few different ways to do Signets. I've seen, the most common ones I've seen are playing all 10, playing none, or playing the... Or either playing all of the green Signets or playing all of the non-green Signets. Like, those are the two different distinctions that I've seen between them, right? Because if you only play the green Signets, you're acknowledging that two-color ramp spells should generally be regulated to green, the color green, and that's, like, part of its color identity. Or you want to specifically include the non-green Signets because you assume green already has its ramp spells, doesn't need any more, and you would rather give that kind of color-fixing slash mana ramp over to... the colors that don't normally have access to those effects.
Sure. I've seen also, like, you talk about the non-green Signets. I've seen specifically, and we tried this for a very, very short time too, only having the blue Signets of all the non-green Signets. So
we want the blue ones to just be the best.
Well, because I think the argument there... was and has always been, if someone were to do that with their cube, is that, you know, a lot of blue's bigger effects are all stapled to higher cost spells, right? Like, counter spells are obviously cheap, but like all of their major plays come from 4, 5, 6 plus mana spells, and so to be able to compete with, like, I think this is also talking about a cube that plays the very traditional, very low-to-the-ground aggro strategies, like the super-fast aggro decks and the super-fast combo decks. Like, for blue to keep up with those and the green ramp deck, like, they need those blue Signets to, like, kick them up a turn. Like, just
move
to keep...
them forward in the game. An early play that actually progresses their board.
Exactly, and keeps them mana... at mana parity with their opponent's decks, right? So that they can cast their control magic when they need to, or their consecrated sphinx in time to, you know, to oppose
before they fall too far behind.
Exactly.
Okay,
so,
sure, I get that.
Well,
obviously we've had the 10 set in for a long time.
Since you gave them to me.
Yeah.
A few years ago.
They used to be a part of my common uncommon cube, and then when I took it apart, I gave them to you as a birthday present.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. They're sweet.
And like I said, I cut them for a short time, but like it was very short.
They moved right back in.
3 months.
Because when everyone wants to play giant spells and combo decks, I mean, Signet's it's hard to get better than 2-mana Rampant Growths, colorless.
Yeah.
When they enable any artifact synergies, tinkers, that sort of thing.
And I think that you just hit it on the head. Like, that's the thing that I have always worried about with cutting all 10 Signets the most, is like, well, how does the artifact deck fare now? Like, and I think that that's wrong of me to think that way. There's obviously tons of artifacts that you can play.
Well, the key is, I mean, you're going to add 10 back, right? So what are you going to add back that's going to make... What are you enabling by cutting all those slots? I mean, it's so hard to find 10 slots, right? That's like saying, what if you cut every counter spell out of the blue section, right? I mean, you're opening up so many slots. What are you possibly going to do with them all? Or cutting all 5 swords from your colorless section, which I've seen people do and I'm not opposed to. I think that's like another interesting way to open up a lot of slots, especially since swords can lead to pretty degenerate gameplay. But those types of big changes open up a lot of space for you to do a lot of cool stuff. So my question is, what would you rather add? Do you want to add different mana rocks? There are certainly probably a handful that we're not playing would slot right in.
I think that for me, that would be the first thing, because I do want to keep some mana rocks in, like low-costed ones, for the artifact decks, for like your Tezzeret decks, for your Tinker decks. For the Wildfire decks, I think certainly need those early mana rocks to generate the advantage to be able to cast your Wildfires, or like your Upheaval decks, right? So I think cards like Cold Steel Heart, Mind Stone, there's a couple more now that just came, like Thought Vessel is the other one. It's just 2-mana.
Pentaprism doesn't offend me.
You know, Pentaprism's fine.
I know it's not a 2-drop, but I think they did release a couple in the last... So you obviously can't play Command Sphere. I was thinking about the ones that came out of the Commander decks. You obviously can't play Command Sphere, because it doesn't make any sense, because you don't have a Commander.
Yeah.
But you could play... This is not a 2-drop, but you could play Unstable Obelisk, which is a 3-mana rock that you can pay 7-mana, sacrifice, and vindicate.
Right.
Which is cool. I mean, that's a pretty sweet card.
Everflowing Chalice would be one.
Everflowing Chalice is a sweet one.
Which enables a lot of things like Storm. It can get fetchable by Trinket Mage.
We still need to get one in here.
Yeah.
Trinket Mage, for sure.
We've played with Everflowing Chalice before, too.
We have, and actually... Actually, I think every time I cut it, because for some reason it's just one of the first things I go to when, like, if I've cut the cube down to 360, or I'm trying to make room for other stuff in the artifacts, I'm just like, this is... It's not
is
necessary.
Is Everflowing Chalice not in right now?
Right now it's not.
Oh, for some reason, I thought, like, 2 weeks ago I saw one of our friends tap out and cast, like, 4 against Mana.
Nope.
Weird. Okay. Must be thinking of something else.
Yeah.
And then there are some other artifacts... I mean, I know I'm straying away from 2-mana, but there are some other ones... that are pretty awesome up the curve, right? Mind Stone, Hedron, Archive, and Dreamstone Hedron, I think, are all super playable. Those cards are all great. I know maybe I'm in the...
Two.
Right. It does, but the other two don't.
He's adding the up-the-curve Mind
Stones. You guys already mentioned Mind Stone, right?
Yeah.
So when you staple 2 Mind Stones together, you staple 3 Mind Stones together. I think those ones are actually pretty sweet, too. And maybe I'm in the minority about Dreamstone Hedron, but I think that card's pretty sweet. I mean, it's big.
Yeah. Are a bunch of Mind Stones stapled together the Mind Mountain? I just want to make the Mind Mountain.
Mind Wall.
Exactly. I mean, it's certainly a solid way to design magic cards. If you ever want to...
Yeah.
You ever got writer's block at R&D, you can just take... What's this? A grizzly bear? Fuck it. Staple 2 of them together. That's a new magic card right there. Boom. Yep.
But you probably are in the minority as far as, like, Dreamstone Hedron's concerned.
Well,
because
you can Treasure Mage for Dreamstone Hedron.
You can, but I don't know too many cubes that play Treasure Mage that isn't the artifact cube.
What if you did play Treasure Mage, though? Because there are some sweet targets for Treasure Mage anyway.
There are. But that's getting into blue.
Well, you cut a Signet. Just make all the colors one more card. Just add one out of all the colors. Add your Treasure Mage to blue.
Would it bother you to have 51 card colored sections or 61 cards? I don't know how many cards there are.
But... There's 65 currently.
So there'd be 66 of each color?
We've already been there.
That's actually you guys
just
metal.
Didn't. You guys just you guys just didn't know. So, but
wow.
No, Alec. The point here is to talk about adding different cards to your colorless section.
Sure.
Like,
you're right, and I feel bad for enabling Mason's stupid arguments. So,
I want to talk about before we start talking about what replaces the signets. I want to talk about the impact that signets have.
Sure.
Right. So we have the 10 set. Right.
Mm-hmm.
How is that affecting other colors?
It's really hard to see exactly what the signets are doing because they add such a ubiquitous source of ramp and color fixing to every color combination. And most importantly, I know very few people who are playing three color midrange decks and then just playing a signet because it taps for two colors, right? Typically in your midrange decks, you need to be casting spells that help you not fall behind on the board or interact with your opponents in some way or put them down on the clock. Somehow. You need to be a little more impactful than a signet in a lot of your three-color midrange decks. But what they do allow is for the more combo-oriented decks to find colors that they're splashing.
Right.
So if I'm playing a blue-red combo deck and I maybe have some white signets, I can splash, say, a Sphinx's Revelation. Or if I have some red signets, maybe I'm splashing my Wheel of Fortune or Duretti or whatever those things are, right? I very rarely think you're getting so much value off of both colors of your signet, but having one of them be an off color that you're splashing for is pretty common. I think that comes up a lot, and I think it's a very powerful effect to just almost ubiquitously have access to in every draft. I know a lot of people's strategies involve drafting all the mana rocks.
Our friend Jim.
Or
he's just talking to us about drafting. Like, well, nobody's picking up signets. I'm going to, now by the end of pack two, I have all 10 signets. What am I going to do with this? You know.
At the other side of the table, we have another kid who picked every single sword in the queue. But so he's got 5 swords, or 4, I suppose, four since swords. Josh had picked up 1.
Yeah.
But
not nearly as good as 10
No.
signets.
I mean, it's arguably pretty good. It means you always have the right sword for the occasion. Lock and load.
But, Alec, what do you think the signets do to green?
Especially now that we've cut down a little bit on the green package, obviously you have a little bit more ramp. What I like it is that it gives the green deck more mana fixing that's already doing what they would want to be doing anyway. Giving them a little bit ahead of curve, and it doesn't require, like, it's not difficult to pick these cards. Like, why wouldn't you want that sort of thing? It just slots right in. It's easy to cast. It's easy to play. You don't have to worry about getting fucked by different colored pips on your cards, because this card is colorless.
So you don't think that it's the fact that we have all 10 signets in the cube is hurting green? You think it's a boon to green?
Yeah, I don't think it's bad. I'd say out of all the colors, green benefits from it the least, because it does still have the ramp packages, and it does still able to do that, but sure. It's still good. It's still not, you're not disappointed to have it. No, sure. I saw the guy who drafted the Cultivates and the Kadama's Reaches, and another one just played with the Signets, and it was still fine.
They were both basically doing similar things.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess that's my point. If somebody else can just draft all these 2-mana... like, all these rampant growths, right? These colorless rampant growths. Why go into green?
Well,
I feel like the signets tear away from green's identity, and they give it to other colors, any color.
Well, no. I don't think it takes its identity just because there's no way, unless you happen to be the guy who did draft all 10 signets, and even then, your deck's identity is just going to be all over the place because you're going to be able to play all of these super sweet cards because you have all the mana for it. Generally speaking, you don't see the signets in such a concentration that it feels like it's doing what the green decks do. The green decks can ramp consistently.
Sure.
In especially the blue decks and the black decks, I've noticed with the signets, it's great when you have them.
Yeah.
But you can't count on that. That's not a plan. You can't just start shoving 6 drops in your deck. It's like, oh, I have that 1 signet. Or even 2. That's still not enough to justify what you're trying to do. You're still not trying to play ahead of curve. It gives you the option to do so should you open it.
Sure.
Right? It's just not the same. And I think green's identity is to be able to do that on a regular basis into some, like, big dopey spell.
Yeah.
And it's whether it's your wildfires, your woodfall primuses, whatever.
Yeah, Borg most enraged.
Sure.
Yes, Borgie. Why not?
Borgie, Borgie.
Yeah. Whereas any of the other decks playing Signets are probably playing them for a very different reason. Are certainly not all in on the actual ramp aspect of it.
Yeah.
Because you can't do it consistently. It's just really nice when you do. It adds explosiveness to decks that didn't have it previously.
So if we were to take a vote right now, you'd be against cutting all 10 Signets?
Yes. Adamantly. Vehemently. I love Signets.
Okay.
I think I'd be for it because I like to see things change up. It's probably not something I would push for so hard right now at the moment because we've changed so much already. And, you know, as we don't draft quite as frequently as we used to, so there'll be plenty of time for me to have fun, muck around, like, mess with things and have a ton of fun. But big changes like that, I'm generally for. Just to see how it goes, you know, the Signets aren't going anywhere. We can re-add them after a while if we want. It's like changing your mana base or changing up any specific color. You can go back if you want, but, you know, maybe you cut it and everyone has so much fun that you never wind up going back.
Sure.
Ultimately, I think it's something I would be interested in exploring, but not something that I'm so desperate to happen right at this very moment, you know?
I think all of them would be cruel. If you said to me, this cube has too many mana rocks, I'd want you to explain yourself, but there's probably a good argument for that. There's a lot of mana in the colorless section of this.
Yeah. A ton.
And if you wanted to put in, like, some of the sweet other artifacts that can enable all sorts of other different strategies, you gotta start somewhere. And when you've got that high density of mana rocks, it would be okay. Yeah.
Yeah, for instance, what if you didn't want to cut the Signets to put in 10 other mana rocks or a bunch of other mana rocks? What if you wanted to cut them all and put in, like, artifact aggro as a color? As an archetype.
Yeah, I wouldn't cut all 10 Signets and re-add 10 rocks. Like,
sure, but if you add a couple and then, you know. But maybe you want to cut all 10 of the Signets plus some other stuff, re-add 2 or 3 mana rocks, and then bam, artifact aggro.
Sure.
Or what's another good artifact type of thing you can put in?
Dude, add in, like, the Michael Synth Lattice, a Dark Steel Forge.
Nethanril's Disc. Oh!
Oh, man.
Crazy.
See, I think that I'm not running quite a number of cards in my artifact section that a lot of cubes are running. I would argue most cubes are running. Namely, like, Phyrexian Revoker, Pithing Needle, Ankh of Mishra. And these are all cards that we've tried. Yeah, but, like, generally, they actually don't get picked very highly.
No.
So we've strayed away from them.
Those seem like weird cube staples.
Right? But I've always kind of thought that, too, because, like, Yeah, I like Ankh a lot. That one's the one that's come back the most, I think, number of times.
Well, and now without our mono red, like...
Yeah. Right. But I think, like, you know, Revoker and Pithing Needle specifically, things like that... there's so many. There's always going to be targets, right? But, like, you can't, like, board into, like, 3 Revokers against X deck that you just have to be able to stop. Like, there's metagaming like that.
Not with that attitude. Let's add the other 3.
Well, but, like, I'm just saying, like, metagaming doesn't happen like that. Like, it doesn't construct it, you know, in cube. So, like, you're gonna stop this one thing, but there's always gonna be something else that's just as powerful or more that you're gonna wish you would have saved that Revoker or that Needle for. And I feel like a lot of times it's just going to be moot, right? So, like, people just haven't put priority on those cards when we drafted them, when we did have them in the cube. It's confusing to me why people still have those kind of cards in it. Maybe it is just to shut down very specific archetypes, right? Like, you're playing Reanimator, Alec, and you're like, oh, turn 2 Gristlebrand. And I'm like, well, I hope I can deal with it. Untap, slam, Pithing Needle, name Gristlebrand. Now your whole plan's ruined and I'm going to kill you.
Right? Except, like, for this 7/7 lifelinking flyer that you've got.
Right, no.
That already drew me 14 cards because I can respond to your stupid card. But
yeah, but, like, you know.
But how about instead, your opponent plays a sword of body in mind and you're like, oh, my blue-green deck can't beat that. Phyrexian Revoker, your sword. Boom, got it.
Exactly. Like, I see them as silver bullets more, and that's probably why people include them. I've never actually, like... This is one of the gray areas for me when reading cube articles and stuff, because I just haven't delved into the colorless sections very often, because we've enjoyed ours so much, I've never felt the need to, like, change it a lot, but like I am kind of itching for ideas change. Now. Mm-hmm. What do you guys have some cards that you're curious about or would like to explore more?
So I'm going to hit you with an idea I had earlier while I was at work, and this might be too crazy, but hear me out. I've been thinking a little bit lately, once we started talking about Mono Black Devotion, I was thinking about other ways to pay you for having Nykthos in your cube. Because it's not in our cube right now, right?
Not but currently. But it had been in for a very long time, and we recently cut it. Because I cut, like, Grey Merch and all that stuff. And I say recently, and I mean, like, a year ago.
But... yeah, it all blurs together. So, but now we're probably going to re-add it at some point.
Yeah.
Especially re-add
we're old and Black we remember. Cards. It was recent.
Yeah.
So, I was thinking about the color that was most screwed over by the devotion mechanic. The only color that didn't get a sweet devotion deck in its constructed format.
What?
And that is white. And as most of you will recognize, and most of you listening at home will know, white is one of the easiest colors to build up devotion for because of how permanent-oriented white is as a color. You've got various enchantments that you put into play that are very hard to remove that also give you white pips on the board. There are tons of white-white cards at every single curve, every single slot on the curve, and there are just really white-heavy decks. Almost every multicolored white deck winds up being heavy white based on just the converted mana cost of your cards, right? Mm-hmm. Or the specific mana cost of your cards, rather. And I was thinking about the kind of shameful way that there's no real good way to get paid off for having a lot of devotion to white, except for maybe if you put Heliod or the enchantment Mastery of the Unseen in your cube.
Sure.
But those are pretty specific. I mean, those are pretty tough picks to make early. They're not unplayable, they're not terrible, but they're not exciting.
So what's your wild idea?
A wild idea, and this is why it ties into the colorless section, is I think they printed a card that's actually kind of a sweet payoff to white devotion in the latest set Kaladesh, which is Master Trinketeer, which is a dorky little guy that you can pay 3 mana to make a servo, and he gives all your Thopters and servos +1/+1.
Right.
He's a white creature. Now, if I was going to add that card, and I also had cards like Sram's Expertise maybe that made servos, I would have to look around and see if there were any other cards that made servos. I know there are some cards that make Thopters in the cube that are already very good. If you then bridged that into your colorless section and thought to yourself, what are maybe some ways that I can make some Thopters, make some servos... Metallic Mimic is a card that I've seen kicking around. I've been wanting to mess around with the idea of playing Metallic
Mimic. That card seems dope.
It does seem pretty dope. It's like a lord pays you for whatever archetype you're drafting,
and
right?
It costs two.
It does. It's a neat card. It's cheap. It's a lord. I think that card's pretty neat, and I think it has some synergy over with these servo makers, and I thought that would be a pretty cool package maybe to put in in some way. So that was my little idea about servos and Thopters and white devotion all at once.
Well, like what, well, I'm going to come back to that. Alec, you looked like you had a point. What were you going to, do you remember what you were going to say?
Oh, yes. It was mostly about, you know, cards like Pithy Needle and Phyrexian Invoker are not exciting.
Oh, sure. Yeah, they are not.
They have a place. They're good. They're not exciting.
They're not exciting,
But if I could add, one of the sweet things I like seeing is very occasionally, and not so much anymore because the workshop decks got a lot worse, but in Vintage, you would see some of the bigger shops decks go spine people. Start spine of Ishtar, you know, blow up a permanent, and then you just find a way to keep doing this over and over.
I did that in Standard for a long time.
I was just going to say.
With Phyrexia's Core.
Yeah,
the land lets you sacrifice an artifact.
Yeah.
Pop the thing up. I'm a big fan of spine. Also, sweet target for Treasure Mage.
Boom. Yeah, and if there was some way, like if you told me you were going to cut the 10 Signets, fuck you, Alec, this is happening, I would want a way to enable Spine Breakers.
I mean, that would be pretty sweet. I'm kind of a fan of Spine. I like Vindicates in general, real versatile answers that can answer a lot of things but are maybe difficult to cast. They're in a couple of colors, or maybe... White. I know there's like Council's Judgment, things like that.
Yeah.
Abrupt Decay, Maelstrom Pulse, Vindicate. These cards that are a little difficult to cast. Spine of Ishtar, not difficult to cast, only costs colorless mana, but costs 7, so you're kind of paying a price putting it in your deck.
But there's a lot of ways to cheat that, too. You get there to, like, you could tinker, I mean, this isn't the most powerful thing in the world, but, like, imagine tinkering on turn 2 your opponent's first land with a spine. Now you just have a spine sitting in play, so, like, later on, you could, you know, if you have sack outlets, like, you're Duretti Scrap Savant, or, you know, you can Goblin Welder it into your yard and then Goblin Welder it back into play, or,
it goes back to your hand after it goes to the graveyard, right? Yeah, when Spine of Ishtar goes from play to your graveyard, it comes back to your hand.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
So, really, you just need some way to get into your graveyard, and I don't know. There are ways. You could
Duretti
to sacrifice it to put some other idiot artifact into play. Maybe a Mana Rock. Maybe, like, a Thran Dynamo, a Grim Monolith, something like that. That, in turn, gives you enough mana to cast your Spine of Ishtar again.
Sure.
Maybe, instead, you cast your Rise of the Gremlins to destroy your opponent's sword, and coincidentally you pay 2 extra mana, get rid of the spine. Spine comes back to your hand, you cast it again next turn. I mean, there are some backdoor ways to loop it if you can't find some really significant way to. I mean, put it in the same deck as Greater Gargoyle. I don't care, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever you got going for you.
Ooh, that sounds
put it in your red-white mid-range deck that has Gargoyle balance for value, and then you're, you know, Spine of Ishtar-ing people to lock them out of lands or something crazy. I don't know. But I am a big fan, and I'm kind of high on Treasure Mage right now, and having more 6-plus drop artifacts is kind of a win for me.
Personally. Well, I mean, you talk about doing, you know, big, dopey, exciting things.
Yeah.
Like, Spine, I think, ranks among the least of them in terms of excitement, but that's the sort of thing that gets my dick hard. Like, I like doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like a half-mast just thinking about it. Like, you know, I'll show you my Spine of Ishtar, you know.
We need an Instagram account for these things. I mean, come on.
Oh, God.
when you make it, Mason. When you make it.
All
right. Point is, my stupid artifact that I would put in a Spine of Ishtar.
What about you, Josh? Do you have any specifics that you want to call out?
Well, we already know how excited I am about Walking Ballista, but that's not really...
That card's going to be
huge. It's going to go in regardless.
Another reason we need Trinket Mage in. And while I'm at it with the Trinket Mage, Treasure Mage, I don't want to steal your thunder. Trophy Mage 2. Put it all in here.
Yeah.
Shove it in. Sure. Let's cut some of the swords, keep the ones that we really like, then put in Trophy Mage, search them up, search up Crucible, search up a Mana Rock, search up some kind of artifact creature that costs 3. Let's get some sweet 3-drop artifact guy. I don't know what it is yet, but we'll get it in there.
Adaptive Great. Automaton to go with our Metallic Mimic.
Oh my god, that sounds...
You could play Chief of Foundry too.
Yeah. And Ravager and Signal Pest and, like, all this stuff, just put in the whole actual Affinity deck.
I'm actually totally cool with an actual Affinity deck. I actually really like the
Affinity deck. Well, I'd love to cut, like, it's minus sweet. The bullshit 0 artifacts. I would love to see, you know, cut your sword with Cranial Plating and still have Cranial Plating be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cranial Plating's dope. Okay, so random side there. Trophy Mage. Trophy Mage is dope.
I actually had one, and now you just...
I ruined it. I'm
you
sorry.
You did.
God damn it. I'm the worst.
No, you're fine. A card I'd like to see come back because I enjoy it a lot, but I think our friend Andrew Britcher would just have too much fun with it, so I'm, like, compelled not to add it, is Trading Post.
Oh, Trading Post is sick. Trading Post, I think, should actively get back in here. Trading Post is a value machine. Talk about ways to turn on Spine of Ishtar if we want to put that in. Trading Post is a house.
That seems good. And what about, you know, just, like, now that we have the real stacks decks?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Trading
Post, and then I really like...
You know, while he mentions it, this is going to be a... okay, I don't want to steal your thunder again. At least say it so we all know. What were you going to talk about?
Oh, Soul of New Phyrexia.
Soul of New Phyrexia.
And Scuttling Doom Engine.
Yeah.
At least one... you know what? You can treasure mage for both of those. So I'm down.
You can.
I'm down for all of it. You can also... Ooh, Scuttling Doom Engine is another cool one to loop back and forth. 6-year opponent. That's actually pretty sweet. We could wind up with, like, several artifacts that you trade in and out of play and through your hand, chaining back and forth with the red cards that continually put artifacts back and forth into play. That would actually be a pretty neat style of deck. I was going to go ahead and mention... Now I forgot what I was going to say. This is so... What a blowout. Jesus.
He's talking about Trading Post.
Trading Post, cards, magic... Sheep. No, that's not where I was going with this.
Springjack Master?
Oh, no, it's goats. Makes goats, not sheep. God, I'm an idiot. What makes sheep in Magic?
Open I just eyes? Said springjack pasture and open springjack eyes.
Pasture makes goats, doesn't it?
Does it make goats?
I'm pretty sure. Actually, I know it makes goats because I once designed a modern deck called Goats Worship Emrakul.
Oh, I remember this. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
A story for another day.
Mm. I just know the Coward's Kevlog Warriors.
That's another relevant interaction from that format. Good times. Good times. I can't remember what I was going to say. So if one of you guys wants to go on. Maybe it was something about one of the Treasure Mage, Trophy Mage.
Mm. Talking about Affinity Creating a Play.
Delver?
Delver? Oh, let me tell you about Delver. Oh, let me tell you about Delver, Alec. Delver's the best. Delver, personally, adds a whole new dimension to any hand, to any game in which you draw it at, in your opener. It's one of those cards that gives you...
I didn't actually ask because I wanted
to... No, but let me just... Delver. It'll take 2 seconds. Here's the thing about Delver. Delver fundamentally changes the way that the game plays once it's in your opening hand, just like Champion of the Parish. That's the thing I'm always trying to explain to people about Champion of the Parish, and to a lesser extent, Goblin Guide. That is that you can have a fairly normal functional deck in the same aggressive mid-range space that a lot of people find themselves in, but then when you happen to draw your one of Delver in your opener, you have an entirely new game plan. Now, instead of using your counter spells to snag off problem permanents maybe that your opponent's trying to play, or spells that you think will impact the game in a significant way, instead you can just use them to tempo them out with your Delver. Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Just like Champion of the Parish. Champion of the Parish, you can have a totally normal white midrange deck, and when you have it in your opener, you're like, oh, cool, I have a 4-4 on turn 3, and you're dead.
Super you also easy. Don't have to worry about it not flipping.
Well, Delver doesn't flip, but Delver doesn't flip in a lot of games that you play it in, but it's still awesome, because you're going to flip it with some kind of regularity in the first few turns of the game, and when you do, it's way, way overpowered for a one drop. I mean, yeah. A 3-power one drop with flying, that's way too good. The fact that sometimes it doesn't flip is the necessary cost of it, right? Sometimes you lose 4 mana crypt flips in a row and it kills you, but it's still worth having in your deck because of how powerful it is. And when you don't flip your Delver, you can talk about getting blown out and beaten up because I didn't flip my Delver for 4 or 5 turns, but you have to understand, like, when you have it in your opener, when you draw it in the game, when you draw it in the middle of the game, it's not very good because it's a Merfolk with Pearl Trident, whatever it is. You're accepting these risks, you're accepting this kind of variance that's going to swing one way or the other when you're putting it in your deck, understanding that the games where you draw it and it's not great are made up for the times where you draw it and it's absolutely absurd, and also where you draw it and it's just fine. It just does some little thing that's totally reasonable, right? Maybe it gives you that pseudo scry in your upkeep so that you can make good decisions with your fetch lands or thought scours or whatever kind of bullshit you've got going on. So
I should have never fucking said anything.
5 extra reasons Delver of Secrets is great.
How do you feel about Mimic Vat?
Mimic Vat's a sweet one to get off Trophy Mage.
Yeah.
That card's dope. Card.
Anything else?
So here's the thing, like, we had Mimic Vat in for a long time, and I had numerous people throughout our group, you know, over the years telling me, don't ever cut Mimic Vat. I love Mimic Vat. It's one of my favorite cards.
And then the other half were like, never played it, ever. Well,
no, even the people, where I was getting at is that even the people that say that, nobody drafts it or plays it.
Yeah, fair.
It's just circled and circled and circled. And then every time I'm like, guys, I think I'm going to cut Mimic Vat, they're like, no, don't.
What are you talking about? Don't cut.
Yeah, so like, and it's a card that I still see in people's cubes online to this day, and I think it's never left the MTGO cube. Like, it's just this, like, weird sacred cow artifact. Like, it provides a ton of value, but it's so mana-intensive, it's very grindy, it has certain conditions to be met to make it, like, really good, right?
You know what I think it is? Really what I think it is I think it's a card people forget about all the time. And this happens very randomly with cards in the cube. Very powerful Magic cards that people don't play for no particular reason, because once they get them on the board, once they are playing with it actively, it feels so good. Almost all the time. There are very few situations where you're like, well, yeah, it's great when it's working for you, but then a lot of the time it's going to be dead well, that's not the way magic works anymore. That's not the way creatures work anymore. Everything has a come into play ability,
right?
Or a leaves play ability, or some kind of value you can get out of it, or is so ridiculously oversized for its cost that you're attacking with a 7/7 for 4 mana or something stupid, you know?
Yeah.
Any of these things are really great to put under Mimic Vat, and once you have a Mimic Vat in play and you're using it, it feels great. But then once you didn't draft it, or once you're thinking about putting it on the board, you just forget how good it feels once it's in play.
Yeah.
I really do think Mimic Vat maybe is just a card people misdraft. And I shouldn't be one to say that, because I never play Mimic Vat. I would play Mimic Vat if I could Trophy Mage it, because check it out, if you Trophy Mage for Mimic Vat and then your Trophy Mage dies, you can then use Mimic Vat to put more Trophy Mages into play and search up all the rest of your 3-drop artifacts. How sick is that, guys?
I think that sounds awesome. Alec looks less impressed.
What if you got a Crystal Shard? Then you Crystal Sharded your Trophy Mage and got more. All right, no.
That's I'd actually... take that Crystal Shard and stab myself in the eyes. Or the eardrums, just never fucking hear you again.
That's cold, homie. That's cold.
Yeah, it's called Crystal Shard.
Now who's the one making stupid jokes? Yeah. God, you're the worst.
So we're coming down to that time.
Yeah, we're gonna cut it. Don't let him finish his thought again.
If you listeners at home have any sweet artifacts or colorless cards, this was really originally going to be a much longer discussion. So we're gonna continue it in a second part at some point. About I want to talk about conspiracies and the Eldrazi and. Things like that, but if you guys at home have anything sweet that you think could replace Signets if we took out all 10, or you have thoughts on the Signets and what they do or don't do for a cube or the cube, let us know.
I got another one for if anyone can think of a really sick artifact creature that costs between like 6, 7, or 8 mana that's like really good that no one puts in their cube, hit us up with it, because I'm trying to think of all the things you can search up with Eye of Ugin that are great, and I'm really thinking Wizards, it's about time you print another Mirror Battle Sphere or Wormcoil.
Dude, Ugin, I knew it wasn't gonna happen. There was like this whole conspiracy about the Phyrexians coming to Kaladesh that was like a big fan theory, right? Ooh. And I was really jonesing for a Mirror Battle Sphere as a masterpiece.
Oh,
it just didn't happen though.
Boo. So bummer. Yeah, way to go, Wizards. But yeah, drop the ball on that one.
Yeah. That's Alrighty. Another like card that I think is like people know that it's good, but they don't remember that it's good until it's like across the table from them. And you're like, good Lord, that thing's going to hit me for 12. And it's they still huge. Like five
I really
want
to, I, when I draft the red green tokens deck next time, I really want to try to get Battle Sphere in my deck. That sounds dope.
Sure. Oh, really quick. At the end, you stole my thunder twice. And I actually had another thought.
Oh my gosh.
So this is what I would want to add. People at home, think about it. I want to play Mud in the cube. Mud. Like real
Metalworker.
Metalworker with...
Domination. Staff Domination.
Staff less so much.
Does it cost 3? Can you Trophy Mage for it?
I don't know. Just let me talk. Sphere of Resistance, Thorn of Amethyst, Lodestone Golem... Trinisphere is a tried-and-true staple of that archetype, but I don't think it has a place in cube. Maybe that's a debate for another day.
It definitely doesn't do the same thing that it does in, like...
Vintage or... Yeah, so... Chalice of the Void also not as great. Like, Sanctum Prelate is kind of...
Dude, it's cubes. We can unrestrict it, so you get all 4?
That's... No.
Fuck you, Wizards, and your stupid vintage restrictions.
Yeah, right? But, yeah, I would love to play, like, the taxing effects in the artifact section.
That's kind of a neat idea. Yeah. I mean, I'm not opposed to it. They probably add a little sum to the white, especially if you're going to add Master Trinketeer, and you got, like, white artifact, like Metallic Mimic Master Trinketeer. That gives you a real nice white artifact deck.
Mm-hmm.
Plus Eldrazi Displacer.
Yeah.
Boom. Sort of the... Pseudo death and taxes.
Yeah, it's like a death and taxes with affinity.
Or like Cuban a taxes. Vintage white Eldrazi deck. I can see that. Taxes. That seems sweet. I can confirm Staff of Domination costs 3.
Okay.
Well, fuck me.
I don't like staff for cube personally, but
that's fair.
I think I'll show you my staff of domination.
It's really good with in combination with Rophalos or
Hey, we don't have him anymore, Mason.
I mean, you could have him in. I'm not saying I'm not always going to talk about cards that are specifically in the cube. These are just options.
No, you could put them in the cube.
Maybe some prospective listener is sitting here listening to me talk about Trophy Mage and is thinking, man, I wonder what sweet three-drop artifacts, and they look through their side, and I mean, like, I get you a sword or a crucible, but I don't know if that's good enough. And then they hear me say, Staff of Domination in combination with Rophalos and Metalworker, which they already have. Boom, lightning bolt goes off in their head, and suddenly Trophy Mage is like a slam auto-include.
I like the lightning bolt bit instead of the light bulb. That was clever.
That was great. Ayo.
Thank you.
How's that working out for you?
What?
Being clever.
On that note, thanks for listening.
Yep. Bye, everybody.